But at the time, it all seemed quite natural. But when the rabbit actually took a watch out of its waistcoat pocket and looked at it and then hurried on, Alice started to her feet, for it flashed across her mind that she had never before seen a rabbit with either a waistcoat pocket or a watch to take out of it.
It's 150 years since that tale was first told, and so we're really celebrating in a big way.
In another moment, down went Alice after it, never once considering how in the world she was to get out again. "If any one of them can explain it," said Alice. She had grown so large in the last few minutes that she wasn't a bit afraid of interrupting him. "I'll give him sixpence. I don't believe there's an atom of meaning in it."
Hello, and welcome to another Daily Info Oxcast. I'm Patrick Vale.
And I'm Ash Bond.
It's just a few days until Oxford celebrates Alice's Day, and in this very special edition of Oxcast, Daily Info has gone down the rabbit hole to find out what Wonderland adventures await us this week. First of all, Ash spoke to Miranda, another of our Daily Info team, who used last weekend very productively to do a bit of picking your own.
I went at the weekend to Medley Manor Farm on Sunday, which is a pick-your-own farm just by Binsey. And you can get to it quite easily from the Botley Road, or you can go across, as we did, from East Oxford. If you actually start in South Park, you can get right the way across to Port Meadow with only going over a tiny bit of urban background. And it's only crossing a few roads, and it's really rather nice. Because I grew up just by Port Meadow, and so Binsey is sort of my local PYO.
Oh, great.
Yeah, they're just as lovely now as they always were. You get asparagus in the spring, that's over now, of course. But I'd forgotten how amazing strawberries are when you get them straight off the vine. And they're so shiny. You know, you put them in the basket and then they glow like this amazing radioactive stuff. But yeah, they're so delicious when they're freshly picked, all warm from the sun. And
and you picked quite a lot, didn't you?
We did. We came home with fewer than we picked, but we ended up with quite a few.
We've got bowls and bowls of raspberries around the office at the moment as well, which is rather nice.
And that's just what's left over. but the gooseberries, they do gooseberries there as well. They're nearly out now. The strawberries and raspberries, though, are going strong. Lots and lots of those, really beautiful and delicious, all glowing and lovely, just like Eden. The other thing they do at the moment, they're doing broad beans and fresh garlic. I've noticed people sort of veering slightly away from me on the street today because last night we had an awful lot of fresh roasted young garlic, which was amazing. Absolutely beautiful. Just put it for about an hour in the oven at about gas 5. And just don't bother to peel it or anything, and then you can squeeze it out of the cloves and put it on bread. Very tasty.
So rather less healthily, I saw on the site this morning that Medley Manor Farm are actually doing cream teas as well.
They are. We saw them. We couldn't afford the calories, so we didn't stop. But it did look well worth it if you can afford the calories. You know, it looked really, really pretty little sort of cakes layered with strawberries and scones, lovely looking scones. Actually, I was seriously tempted by the scones.
So that's every Sunday, 3 till 5:30 p.m.
Yep, that's right. It's a little sort of setup. It's open air, you know. It's and they've got sort of a little shack that they serve you out of, and a few tables laid out next to their little table of cream teas. It's absolutely lovely.
Sounds wonderful. Let's go again.
As I mentioned before, I have grown most uncommonly fat. Yet you turned a back somersault in at the door. Pray, what is the reason of that? In my youth, said the sage as he shook.
The Olympic torch is coming to Oxford. We've been watching with great anticipation as the various marquees and gates have been going up in South Park. Yesterday, I tramped across the very wet grass to talk to Steve Gallagher about the preparation for Monday's evening celebrations. I'm here with Steve from Block 9, as part of the sort of creative collaboration that's going into the Tree of Light celebration. So can you tell us a little bit about this Tree of Light, Steve?
So we were approached by Stuart Collins, who had the idea for this show, and he told us that he wanted to organise a big community celebration, bringing together loads of people from around the sort of Thames Valley area, and he wanted some designers for the centrepiece. And came to us because we do big stuff outdoors.
Yeah, and we're here with this huge, rather impressive metal structure that's dominating South Parks at the moment. Yeah. And I've been running around South Parks last week and just seeing it grow and grow and grow and grow.
Yeah.
So what might we expect on Monday evening from the Tree of Light?
So this scaffold won't look like a scaffold anymore. This scaffold is a strange hybrid between a tree and a sort of a weird industrial generator stroke power facility. And basically it's a bit of a sort of fairy tale story, really, and it's kind of suggestive of what might happen if we don't sort of look after the planet. The idea is that something's gone wrong, and human beings have built this weird tree-like machine to perform the functions of a natural tree.
There are some beautiful sketches on your website, I noticed, your ideas board there. So how are preparations going? Are you on plan?
Yeah, it's a bit
on
cold.
Schedule?
It's a bit cold and wet, but yeah, things are going well. The main sort of structure is up, and from tomorrow we'll start putting all the scenery onto that structure, and then on Tuesday and Wednesday we'll be lifting the main part of the tree, the sort of crown of the tree, up into position. It's quite a big engineering project, as you can see.
So where do you come in the evening celebrations? What kind of timing is that? You near the end?
Yeah, the show starts at 9:30 on Monday evening. So people can come down here and have some food and hang out during the afternoon and early evening, and then watch the show from 9:30 onwards.
Well, thank you very much for talking to us, Steve.
My pleasure.
Steve did also ask me to mention that if you do miss the Tree of Light this time, you can catch it again, as it will be moving to Stoner Park in Henley, the 21st of July.
As Steve was saying, the gates open about 3 p.m. for picnicking and so on. There's also musical entertainment from 5. The London Organising Committee for the Olympic and Paralympic Games, or more succinctly, LOCOG, have orchestrated a very good musical menu, and we've got Richard here to tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so we've got lots of activities and bands playing on. We've got Britain's Got Talent finalist Twist and Pulse Street Dance Troupe.
That sounds really good.
Yeah. The headline band is a band called Young Guns, who they're localish. They were formed in High Wycombe about 4 years ago. They played the Academy a couple of years ago, and since then, Kerrang! Magazine, especially, I think they crowned them Best Newcomers, and been doing very good ever since. Sort of good hard-rocking youngsters.
Yeah. I went on their MySpace the other day, and they've been away in Europe, haven't they, on a big European tour?
Yeah, they've really been breaking through. I think they'll be playing at Reading and Leeds this year. It's
high flying.
Yeah, good to see local success.
They seem pretty enthusiastic from their MySpace as well. So.
Yes, that's yeah. Young musicians and their beat combos have a lot of energy these days.
So I hear.
Yeah. Appropriate for a sporting event. You know.
Well, indeed.
You don't want someone just standing there not moving around.
Would you recommend any other interesting gigs, sedentary or otherwise?
Well, as always, check our website for all the full details. There's a few things coming up this week I'd recommend. It's that time of year. You might notice there's lots of comedians doing gigs, and that's because they're all doing their Edinburgh warm-up shows.
There's a lot of pre-fringe.
So especially the library is having a Mild Friends Comedy Festival.
Excellent.
That's going on all this week. As far as other gigs, well, here's a few recommendations. How about the Wheat Sheaf on Friday? We have Club Cacophony. That's a regular event, been going a long, long time, run by a couple of great local musicians and promoters. This Friday, they've got the Seller Family, Creepy Uncle and Right Hook. Seller Family, I thoroughly recommend. It's always an eclectic mix at Club Cacophony. The Seller Family is a sort of three-piece, sort of punk energy hardcore band. Thoroughly recommend them. I saw them at the Academy when they were supporting Borderville, along with the Guggenheim. Great night there.
Yeah, very good band.
So that's Friday night. Saturday we got the Inflatables playing Oxford City Football Club Marston.
They're related to Inflatable Buddha?
They are not related to Inflatable Buddha. They are a local ska reggae legends.
Excellent.
Often confused with Inflatable Buddha because they have the same word in it. Inflatable.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was becoming confused until you put me right.
Indeed.
There.
And then next week, Friday the 13th. Appropriately enough, we've got some scary looking acts coming up on that night. Bossophonic run a regular world music style night at this cellar.
That's and really famous, isn't it?
That's been going a long time.
I love Bossophonic. I used to go there all the time as a student. Brilliant.
Yeah, so next week they have Molotov Jukebox, which I think are worth seeing just for the name. They're a a sort of gypsy dubstep band. And the same night, we've got Charlotte Church at the Jericho Tavern.
The real Charlotte Church that you would think of when you say Charlotte Church. That's
that same, the TV presenter, actress.
Singer.
Levison Witness.
Yep. Excellent.
She is playing on 5:30. Well, she was playing at Cornbury last week.
Right. Yeah.
With a sort of very trimmed down pop rock band. Got very good reviews at for Cornbury. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see her.
And are there still
slumming it at the
that?
Jericho. I don't know. There were a few available a few days ago.
That does seem remarkable. So get on the website quickly if you want to
make yourself a happy Friday the 13th.
Yeah. Excellent. And if you do go along to any of those gigs or any we haven't mentioned, submit a review. Let us know what you think.
Beware the Jabberwock, my son, the jaws that bite, the claws that catch. Beware the Jubjub bird, and shun the frumious Bandersnatch. He took his vorpal sword in hand.
So, Miranda, do you know Alice in Wonderland?
Yes, yes, indeed. And Through the Looking Glass, which is the sequel, and I think it's actually even better. The White Knight, for example, only turns up in Through the Looking Glass, which... isn't generally known, actually. I think people tend to assume the White Knight comes through the Alice in Wonderland bit. They may have sort of stuck him in a film or something.
I have to confess that my primary knowledge of Alice in Wonderland is through the Disney.
Fair enough for most people, but it's the book is actually a great deal of fun because it is complete nonsense in a rather coherent kind of way. It's not quite as mad as Edward Lear, but it is And because of that, it's more satisfying. So it's a bit like a series of unfortunate events. You know, there's structure to it, even though the things that happen in it are very much and so non sequitur after non sequitur. It's a bit bonkers. Also, I find it quite interesting just as a historical document because an awful lot of the things that happen are referring to the culture of the day. So you get an awful lot of things that people would have known about the way a servant might give notice or the way. You know, so people might wear hats or something, and it's well, you know, the Mad Hatter for a start. I remember being very confused by the Hatter when I was little. What is a Hatter? You know, when you're
what
five,
is a Hatter? When,
well, it's a person who makes hats. You know, but when you're sort of 5 or 6 years old in the whenever it was 80s, you know, it's not a word you've come across. Mm. It's not something you've ever really known about.
So, is the Hatter your favourite character?
Oh no, no, no! I like the White Knight a lot, but the actual teapot. But it's just full of wonderful little mad things, you know. Twinkle, twinkle, little bat, how I wonder what you're at. You know, it's absolutely brilliant. And was always in the shelf next above the one she was looking at. And this one is the most provoking of all. But I'll tell you what, she added, as a sudden thought struck her. I'll follow it up to the very top shelf of all. It'll puzzle it to go through the ceiling, I expect. But even this plan failed. The thing went through the ceiling as quietly as possible, as if it were quite
used to
it.
I don't know if you've ever had a lucid dream,
but if you are in a lucid dream and you're absolutely determined to get some kind of proof that you've been in a lucid dream, so you're trying to memorise things around you, that is something that happens a lot. The things change in front of you and you're trying to sort of follow them along as they move and flow and twist into things that are just like them and where they should have been a moment ago. And it's very frustrating. I think that's just a beautifully observed piece of psychological weirdness.
And psychological weirdness is a great summary of
Alice in Wonderland. Absolutely. As she says, I don't believe there's an atom of meaning in it. I make them into mutton pies and sell them in the street. I sell them unto men, he said, who sail on stormy seas. And that's the way I get my bread. A trifle, if you please. But I was thinking of a plan to die...
Alice's Day is organised by the Oxford Story Museum, located on Pembroke Street, a magical museum that I confess I'd never been to before this week. I met up with Kath there to find out what this weekend of all things Alice has in store for us. I'm here with Kath in the Story Museum, and we're about to go into the reading room, and there's a lovely little sign outside saying, "If you go in here, a dragon may appear." Really interesting museum. Kath has taken me on a tour of a few rooms. We've gone into a room with lots of hats, lots of Mad Hatter's hats. It's fascinating. They're all different, and you can sit on the chairs, and they're all different hats that you can put on and play with. And then there's another room with all different sized tables, and you go through, and there's a story loom, as well. It's a really magical place, and I've got to admit it's my first time here. I'm definitely going to come back, and this weekend will be the perfect time to come back because, of course, it's Alice's Day. Why was this weekend chosen to celebrate Alice and Alice in Wonderland?
Well, we've always had this day on the first Saturday of July because it's the first Saturday after the tale of Alice in Wonderland was first told, and that was on July the 4th. And it's important this year because it's 150 years since that tale was first told. And so we're really celebrating in a big way.
So what do you think it is about Alice and Alice in Wonderland that so fascinates people today after 150 years?
I think it's just sometimes it's just the surreal nature of the stories and the characters, and I think obviously that appeals to adults as well as children. And I think the language itself really appeals to children, and the words that he uses. I think my own children absolutely love nonsense verse when they were little, and they particularly love Lewis Carroll, and I think that's true of grown-ups as well, just this play on words. But I think also that however old you are, there's something that you can read into the stories, and it's been interpreted in countless different ways.
Wonderful. So there's lots of events happening this weekend for Alice's Day. Can you pick a few out for us?
Well, we've got things happening all over the place in more than 20 venues, so all the main historic and popular venues in Oxford are taking part, which is absolutely great, and every year we have a few more. I think this is about the fifth or sixth year that we've been running Alice's Day. So we've got croquet at the castle, we've got flamingo croquet outside the Natural History Museum, we've got a Mad Hatter's Tea Party on the roof terrace of the Ashmolean, we've got lots of performance theatre all happening around the place with a company called Curious Company, who I've seen before and are absolutely great, and we've got the National Laureate of Storytelling, Catrice Horsley, who's coming to tell stories in three different places, including our own here at the Story Museum, and she's unique as well. She's great. She will really involve the children in the stories that she's weaving.
So I know people are looking forward to the Olympic torch coming to Oxford, and that's on Monday the 9th. But on the Sunday, there's a completely different kind of race happening here, isn't there?
Yes, well, we've got Oxford's answer to the Olympics this time, because we felt that we'd like to do our own eccentric response to the sort of competitive element of the Olympics, which is fine, but we think Oxford is different in its own way. And so we've got an event called the Caucus Race, which is happening on the Sunday, and it's totally non-competitive. Anybody can join in, and we're hoping that hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people are going to be joining in this. And it's the kind of race where there are no rules and everyone wins a prize. So
it's the perfect kind of race.
It's the perfect kind of race, and we think it's a good antidote. And so, in fact, the London 2012 Festival, because we're part of that, we've been chosen to be part of the Cultural Olympiad with that event.
So where is this caucus race going to be happening?
It's in Christchurch Meadow. It's in Merton Field, which is very appropriate, since obviously it's a place where Lewis Carroll was a mathematics don. So, Christchurch have very kindly let us come in there and use the meadow.
And as in uffish thought he stood, the Jabberwock, with eyes of flame, came whiffling through the tulgey wood and burbled as it came.
What is your favourite Alice in Wonderland character?
I think I have to say the Mad Hatter, because I think it's linked to tea parties, and I do like tea parties.
If you'd like to find out more about Alice's Day in Oxford, please do check out our feature page on our website, dailyinfo.co.uk, where there are plenty of wonderful Alice events to choose from. This Thursday, the Phoenix Picture House have a showing of The Last Projectionist, a film that discusses the role of the projectionist in cinema, both past and present. To find out his film recommendations this week, I caught up with Hogg, very fittingly, in the Ultimate Picture Palace's projection room. Hogg and I have just made the journey up the ladder into the UPP projection room, and it's amazing up here. We've got an old film reel in the corner, but we've also, in contrast, got a pile of DVDs as well. So we've got things from Casablanca through American Psycho, all the way to Shrek. And what was one that I just saw? Oh, Toy Story 3 in the Dark Knight. This is a really good setting to talk about the film that's coming at the Phoenix this week, which is The Last Projectionist, a film that talks about the history of the Birmingham Electric and asks the question whether the transition between 35mm to digital marks the end of an era for projectionists. So you are a projectionist.
Yeah. That's right. And in fact, we... A couple of links there. The Electric Cinema in Birmingham used to be owned by Bill Hine, who used to also own this cinema, and not the Moulin Rouge for older listeners. They might remember that cinema in Headington. And we too have recently gone digital. We've been slowly making the transition to digital over the last couple of years because less and less films are available in 35mm format, both because of the expense for distributors and just because digital is a much easier format to distribute films on. You don't have the same kind of wear and tear on the film and stuff like that. That having been said, you still need someone to project. You need someone there sort of running the machinery. Mm. So I guess one could sort of think about it that the role of a projectionist used to be a little bit more like a mechanic, sort of keeping the machinery oiled and things like that. It was a very sort of physical, hands-on job. Now it's a lot more digital, so it's a bit like an IT manager. So you have to load the films on digitally as moving image files and then be able to operate the machinery. And, you know, the same amount of things can go wrong with a projector, whether it's digital or 35mm. So there's still a role there, I think, for projectionists, whether they have to, as I do, double up on tasks. So because it's just effectively now pushing a button instead of doing 12 things at once, then, you know, I have to sell tickets and popcorn as well.
So The Last Projectionist is on, as we said, on Thursday at 9pm at the Phoenix. So it's something on at the UPP this week, and that's a special event for Alice's Day.
That's right, yeah. Right. We're showing Jan Svankmajer's film Alice. Jan Svankmajer, sort of Czech surrealist, who certainly in his early career was best known for making very unusual stop-motion animated films. Animating objects, so things coming to life. So a very famous film is Meat Love, featured just bits of meat coming to life and wandering around. So the idea of applying that style of sort of nightmarish fear of inanimate objects coming to life was applied to Alice in Wonderland. So in 1985, I think it's made, or 86, collaboration between Jiří Trenka's Czech film studio and Channel 4. They produced this version of Alice in Wonderland, which explores the more nightmarish world of Alice. So the little girl lost in a big house where the caterpillar is made of an old sock that comes to life and the white rabbit is a stuffed rabbit that bursts out of its glass cage.
Oh, goodness. Okay, so this has a PG rating. Would you suggest it... Is it a children's film?
Funnily enough, one of the first line in the film is this a film for children? Maybe. I think it's a film for all ages. And I certainly remember watching it on Channel 4 back in the early 90s. They serialised it, I guess because they put money into it, they had some rights, and I remember being fascinated by it. I think kids have the capacity for sort of nightmarish imagination. I think it's just on the right side of not too scary. I mean, we showed it as a kids club film years ago at the Phoenix when I used to work there, and the kids definitely sort of reacted with vigour. They sort of screamed at the right moments and hid behind the seats and stuff like that, but I think they sort of left the cinema thinking they'd seen something much more imaginative than, say, a Disney adaptation or something that was more asinine. I think it's certainly in the spirit of Lewis Carroll's original of, you know, that the child is an adult sort of wandering through an adult world trying to figure out these kind of curiouser things.
Great. So that's on...
So I certainly wouldn't dissuade you from bringing your children, but, you know, be prepared to take them out for an ice cream at G&D's afterwards to sort of...
And you're very well located with us, aren't you?
Yeah, we're just over the road from G&D's Cowley Road branch. So
brilliant. So that's on Sunday.
That's right.
At 4:30.
At 4:30. Yeah.
4:30. Okay. So is there anything else in the world of film in Oxford that's going on this week?
Well, one interesting thing is Modern Art Oxford have started. Well, they haven't started doing films. They always have a film programme on. It's less regular than ordinary cinemas, but they do some interesting programming. They've currently got an exhibition on of Jenny Saville's paintings. Jenny Saville, local artist, big canvases focusing on sort of bodily disgust, I guess. That's one way. I'll probably get into trouble with art historians for saying that. But.
No, I've seen some of those. She's a very famous 1990s artist.
That's right. She was one of the YBAs, the Young British Artists, who her first degree show was bought up, snapped up by Saatchi. And since then, she's been very, very highly sought after by collectors. So it's nice
that a lot of these works that are in private collections are now being sort of exhibited in beautiful big gallery spaces, so you can see that. So they've created a film program, partly organised with Jenny Savile actually herself, showing films on the theme of the body and bodily transformation and stuff like that. So this Thursday they're showing Almodovar's recent film, The Skin I Live In, which is a brilliant piece of sort of very macabre body horror, exploring sort of, as most Almodovar films do, ideas of transgender and identity and things like that, and body modification in this instance. So it kind of fits in quite nicely with that. Their season runs throughout the summer in tandem with the Jenny Savile exhibition, but also to tie in with another sort of thematic body thing, the Olympics.
Of course, the Olympics, yes.
So the use of body in a very, very different way than Savile's paintings, but also one that I guess the Olympics will force us to look at in different ways, you know, people pushing themselves faster and jumping higher and going for longer and all that sort of stuff.
And will you be there watching the torch on Monday?
I hope to be. I'm on a train back from Liverpool on Monday, so if it gets here on time, I will see it. If not, I'll make up my own little torch and pretend that I was there.
It goes dark, yeah. And then it goes through again.
Thank you very much, too.
It's been a pleasure.
It's basically stopping and starting 24 times a second.
That's all from us this week. Thank you very much to all our guests, Hog from the UPP, Steve and Kath from the Oxford Story Museum. And if you'd like to find out anything more about anything we've discussed, please check our website on www.dailyinfo.co.uk. A slight side note to that, you can get a fantastic history of the UPP if you'd like to know more about Oxford's oldest cinema, which we did for its 100th birthday, which was in 2011. So go to our website, find the UPP's venue page, and enjoy the history.